I'm not so interested in talking anymore. We have such nice conversations, such respectful and nice conversations, and then people die the following night with a missile going into a town and hitting, recently, I guess, the nursing home, but they hit other things. Whatever they hit, people die. So, Adam.
Yeah, here is what Medvedev said, Scott, on Twitter and X in response to Lindsey Graham. He said, it's not for you or Donald Trump to dictate when to get at the peace table. Negotiations will end when all the objectives of our military operation have been achieved. Work on America first. And you see the way that as time goes by, it seems that this sort of the momentum that the United States had, and I believe they still have it, to break a deal with Russia, they're losing. They're somehow, the way that Donald Trump talking about Putin, the way that Lindsey Graham is somehow driving the show behind the scene, is the momentum getting away from the opportunity, from what's going on between the United States and Russia?
There's never been an opportunity for Donald Trump to get his way with Russia, ever. This was always pie in the sky thinking. There was a chance for the United States to put pressure on Ukraine to accept reality and to put pressure on Europe to stop reinforcing stupidity. And this could have brought about peace, and Donald Trump would have gotten a lot of credit for that peace. But the peace would have been 100% on terms dictated by Russia. Everybody needs to remember, Russia didn't start this war. This war was thrust upon Russia by the collective, by the United States, by Donald Trump, the policies of the first Trump administration. You know, during that time, Russia was actively working to fulfill the promise and the potential of the Minsk Accords. And it was the United States that, you know, continued to send lethal weapons to Ukraine, to train the Ukrainian army to NATO standards for the sole purpose of confronting Russian separatists and Russian forces in the Donbass region. And, you know, according to the pie in the sky thinking of the Ukrainian politicians and their CIA and MI6, masters, Crimea as well, to push Russia to its 1991 frontiers. Trump is to blame here. He's the man who made this possible. The Russians were going to cut slack. I think the Russians were willing to go into temporary amnesia and pretend that Donald Trump was the great peacemaker and not the horrific war maker that he is. The reality, the Russians know the reality, but Russia was never going to yield. They made that clear from the start. Go back to the initial meeting between Marco Rubio and Sergei Lavrov in Riyadh. And they came out saying, well, the Russians have given us reality and we need to yield to everybody. But then they turned around and said, but now we need Russia to make some concessions. And the Russians are like, well, what part of address root cause of the conflict don't you understand? We will make no concessions on that. None, zero. There's no latitude for this. And there's no reason for you to hope that this will be. This was known from the start. And yet Donald Trump, instead of acceding to this reality and telling his policymakers, let's find a policy that meets this reality, get this war over with now, he continued to believe that he had some sort of leverage over Russia, perhaps advised by Scott Bessent, the Secretary of Treasury, who believed that, he could break Russia's economy through sanctioning oil. Steve Kellogg, who believed that they could break Russia's military by continuing to flow weaponry into Ukraine. I mean, these are some of the worst advisors in the world, giving the worst advice in the world to the dumbest president in the world about things Russia. Now he has Lindsey Graham, whispering in his ear as well. Donald Trump is a narcissistic egomaniac. We have to remember that. And if it has to all be about Donald Trump. This is a man who viewed the Russian-Ukrainian conflict not in terms of saving lives. What a hypocrite. He's providing the weaponry that not only kills Russian soldiers, but gets more Ukrainian soldiers killed. He facilitates the continued flow of weaponry into Ukraine that just lengthens this war, complicates this war, but doesn't change the inevitable outcome. The man most responsible for deaths in Ukraine today is Donald Trump. He could have brought this war to an end. You can't expect Russia in an existential struggle, and this is indeed an existential struggle for Russia, to, you know, say, oh, we'll do what the United States wants us to do, even though the United States started this war back in 2014 or even going back further. Russia has a long memory. They know exactly what's happening here. They know exactly what's at stake here. And they're not going to surrender to the United States. They're not going to yield to Donald Trump. So what we're seeing here is Donald Trump throwing a temper tantrum. Again, he's being poorly advised. If he thinks for a second Russia gives one rat's ass about the threat of sanctions, he doesn't know Russia, nor does he understand China, nor does he understand anybody else, any of the other players out there. You know, what we do know is as we speak, the Ukrainian government is at risk. The confidence in Volodymyr Zelensky is plummeting. And if reports coming out of the Russian intelligence service are true, there's meetings taking place in Switzerland behind the back of Zelensky to, you know, to have him replaced with Zeluzhny, who would just be another failed leader. Because, again, it doesn't recognize reality. Let me just tell you what the reality for Ukraine is. Ukraine will be strategically defeated by Russia. The current government will not exist, either in terms of the presidency or the construct of the Rada, Ukrainian parliament. There will be new elections, and these elections will produce a pro-Russian government beholden to Russia that will seek to transform Ukraine from the failed proxy of the West that it currently is into a member of the Union state. Ukraine will become, like Belarus, a partner of Russia in the framework of what they call the Union state. It's not the Soviet Union. It's something different. But Ukraine will forever be attached to Russia, to Belarus, to the East. It will never be part of Europe. That's the reality. The sooner Donald Trump recognizes this reality, the better. But he's not going to. I mean, look, Tulsi Gabbard, God bless her soul, is out there, you know, doing God's work about exposing the scam of Russiagate. But, you know, she's had a deputy appointed. I think Aaron, I can't remember his last name. He's the new number two at the ODNI, at the Office of Director of National Intelligence. Aaron Jacob, maybe. But he's a Russophobe. Simply, he's a CIA hack. He was the guy advising Trump about Russia in the first term, you know, the guy giving the bad advice about how to arm Ukraine and all that. That's him. He's now the number two guy. There's not anybody advising Donald Trump right now who knows the reality of Russia. They're all enemies of Russia. And as a result, he continues to head to take us down a very dangerous path because, you know, all of this Russophobia, all this reinforcing the paranoia of Europe leads to situation that we experienced, for instance, in Wiesbaden a couple of weeks ago, where Christopher Donahue, the four-star general who commands U.S. forces in Europe and allied forces, sit there and talked openly about how we could take out Kaliningrad, the Russian exclave that used to be part of, you know, former East Prussia, the city of Kaliningrad and the surrounding areas. We could take it out, he said, very quickly. No, you can't. But if you tried, you'd die instantly. Because, gosh, let me remind everybody that Kaliningrad is part of the Russian Federation. And the Constitution of Russia deems it to be such. And the nuclear doctrine of Russia is such that anytime the territorial integrity or the sovereignty of Russia is threatened by nuclear armed powers, that Russia will respond nuclearly. So, Chris Donahue, the quickest way to die, because you will be dead within, say, an hour and a half of making that decision, is to order NATO forces to move on Kaliningrad. You will be hit by either a Russian nuke or an Oreshnik or something, but you'll be dead. So will your entire staff. So will the entire command and control structure of NATO. Kaliningrad is Russia. It ain't your toy. It ain't a game. It ain't a soccer ball to be kicked around. And to threaten it, what in God's name do you think we would do if China or Russia threatened Alaska or Hawaii or Texas or California? Kaliningrad is Russia. I mean, these people are stupid, truly stupid. But the dumbest one of all is Donald Trump. Let me make another prediction for you. He says he doesn't want to talk to Vladimir Putin right now. Within 30 days, he'll be making that phone call because his policy is about ready to collapse like a house of cards.
You don't need to have some sort of sympathy toward Russia just put yourself in the shoes of Russians, you can understand that Russia cannot afford losing Ukraine. And losing Ukraine, I mean that NATO puts the troops in Ukraine, puts the weapons in Ukraine. Why is that so difficult for the presidents of the United States to understand what is the main cause, what is the real concern on the part of Russia? It's somehow, it's so simple, but when it comes to the presidents of the United States, somehow there are some barriers, there's some obstacles in the way that they think about Ukraine and the policies of Europe together with the United States in Ukraine.
No, Donald Trump understands fully well. This is why he implemented the policies he did in his first term. He knows that the goal is to turn Ukraine into a NATO fist that can strike upwards and threaten Moscow, threaten the Russian strategic center. You know, people need to realize that the Russian Federation is a successor to the Soviet Union in terms of Moscow and the defense of it. Russia was the core element of that. The near abroad, what we call the Baltics states, Ukraine, Georgia, etc., combined with the Warsaw Pact. You know, when Russia's strategic center was defined, it was during the Cold War when you had the Warsaw Pact. So NATO was way the hell out there. You know, Poland was part of the Warsaw Pact. East Germany was. We're talking about NATO, you know, being on the River Elbe. And suddenly, NATO has progressed eastward. People say, well, why does Russia object to NATO? Because every expansion of NATO brought NATO capabilities that much closer to Russia's strategic depth. And Ukraine is literally, if you carve that out, you are just thrusting NATO straight into the stomach of Russia. Russia can't accept this. Can't accept this at all, especially given the hostile nature that, you know, the attitude, the posturing of NATO toward Russia. It just isn't going to happen. It's not going to be allowed to happen. And yet, this is the policy that Trump was trying to implement during his first term. Trump knows damn well what's at stake here. He's just playing stupid games. The Russians, I think, had hoped that Trump would actually back away from the failed policies of the past and recognize that, you know, you can't have Ukraine and NATO. And indeed, early on, you heard Trump administration people talk about that. But then they keep talking as if Zelensky is going to be the president, or a Zelensky-like figure is going to be the president, that Ukraine is going to be this entity that still maintains its Banderist connectivity. And has this military linkage. I mean, if you're not talking about the absolute demilitarization of Ukraine, what you create is a NATO nation in everything but the legal, stamp of approval. It's a huge NATO army equipped with NATO weaponry capable of striking Russia's strategic depth. That's what Trump wants. That's what he wants. He knows what he wants because he helped design it. In his first term, he was briefed by the CIA. This is why they built 20 bases in Ukraine. He was briefed by the Pentagon. This is why they trained the Ukrainian army. Trump knows what's at stake here. That's the hypocrisy of it all. The Russians had hoped that he wouldn't. But what he does, what Trump does every day is exposes the fact that he's a lying sack of cow manure who cannot be trusted at all by anybody, especially the Russians. I mean, and this pains me to say, because we really do need to have better relations with this Russian government. This Russian government is ready and willing to sit down and, you know, talk about a new way forward with the United States, normalization of relations. But in order to do that, we have to stop this notion that we can strategically defeat Russia or position ourselves to strategically defeat Russia. Russia will have nothing to do with it. We wouldn't allow it. We wouldn't allow it. Would we allow, you know, China to come into Mexico and carve away Texas right there with all the Chinese weapons ready to strike into the American strategic depth? Hell no, we wouldn't allow that. Why in God's name do we think Russia is going to allow NATO to make a move on Ukraine? It's just stupid.
Can the United States be great not having Russia and China as the enemy, as the enemy of the United States?
Can we? Sure. I mean, fact is, it's the only way the United States will be great. The United States will not be great by its military. Its military is destroying it. I mean, this military is supposed to protect the United States. It's destroying the United States. It's putting us into a state of bankruptcy. It alienates us with the world. It causes us to behave in ways that aren't conducive to a new multipolar reality. And it puts us on the track towards wars we can't afford to fight. Literally, all this technological supremacy we brag about, it costs money. And as we just proved with the 12-day war between Israel and Iran, we can't afford it. I mean, we ate up 25% of our THAAD missile stocks. Those are the missiles that are supposed to shoot down all the Russian missiles, the Chinese missiles, if we ever go to war against Russia and China. We just used 25% of them to help defend Israel against not even Iran's, you know, B team in terms of ballistic missile capability. Our SM-3 stocks, we haven't been producing SM-3s because we haven't been in a war like this, but they're very expensive missiles, and we just blew through them. We can't build them very fast. The fact is, any Pentagon planner, any Pentagon logistician will sit there and should be advising people, we can't sustain a high-intensity conflict against a peer-level force like Russia and China for more than a week. And then we run out of everything. We run out of everything. And that's the reality of it. We've built this hugely expensive military that, you know, we have enough money to gold plate it. But when the veneer is cut through, we're down to cardboard, baby, because that's all that's left. This is not the path to greatness. The path to greatness is normalization of relations, normal economic, not this garbage that Trump just pulled off with the EU, the biggest scam ever. I mean, just think about it. There's nothing about the deal real. Ursula von der Leyen cannot commit Europe to $600 billion in investment in America. So it's a lie. There's nobody there lining up. There's nobody there lining up to give America $600 billion. So it's a lie, straight up lie. Isn't going to happen. The $760 billion in energy, I mean, we don't have that much energy to sell Europe, even if we wanted to. It's not how the system works. And even if we did, Europe's paying 3 to 4 times as much for this. In order to commit to $760 billion from the United States, they have to cut off, for instance, the gas they buy from Norway. It's not just about delinking itself from Russia. I think what, $23 billion worth of petroleum products were sold last year. But it means Norway, that they, in order to commit to this, you have to stop buying cheap Norwegian gas and you have to buy this hugely expensive American gas. I mean, it might not cost America much to produce it, but by the time we, you know, liquefy it, put it on ships, bring it over, deliquefy, get it into the system and all that stuff, 3 to 4 times as much as the Norwegian stuff. The Norwegian stuff is more expensive than the Russian stuff. And this is what Europe has signed up to. It's not going to happen, by the way. We don't have $760 billion worth of liquid natural gas products to sell to Europe. And they couldn't buy it even if we did. It's a scam, a setup, fake, fraud, a con. But this is America. We can't be great doing this. I mean, my God, I'm not sympathetic. You know, the Europeans, they built their own ship. They shot the holes in the hull and it's sinking. That's on them. But I hate to see people debase themselves like this. I mean, as much as I despise Ursula von der Leyen, to watch her debase herself in this fashion is nobody wants to see that. What we'd like to see is normal relations. And in fact, if we want to have normal, healthy relations with Europe, we can't be engaged in this sort of thing. Europe needs to have trust in us. How is this a trustworthy partner? We're a colonial power overlording over Europe. It's sickening. Every aspect of how Donald Trump relates with our erstwhile friends and allies is sickening, sickening. It sickens me.
We know that during the Biden administration, Starmer was asking the Biden administration, if you remember that meeting between the Biden administration and Starmer, they were asking some sort of permission from the US government to attack Russia, to hit deeper into the Russian soil. It seems that even not having that sort of connection between the Trump administration and Europeans, they're getting that from the Trump administration. When you look at the attack on nuclear bombers in Russia, it's not something small to be ignored. It's something big. Russia is not just panicking. The way that Russia is behaving doesn't diminish the importance of what has happened. Do you feel that we have some sort of sanity in the Pentagon? Because I see this problem coming from Pentagon and the sort of reports that they're giving, the sort of information they're giving Donald Trump. Because we had Pentagon going against Biden, going and deciding not to escalate against Russia. But you don't see that role coming from Pete Hegseth and anybody from Pentagon. At least we can say that nothing is coming out but some sort of propaganda about drones making new weapons. And you don't see any sort of strategic thinking or Pete Hegseth putting out something more sane when it comes to the war in Ukraine.
Well, actually, Hegseth did. I mean, in the aftermath of the 12-day war between Iran and Israel, Hegseth took a look at the expenditure of munitions and the drawdown that's already taken place in American stockpiles, and he said, we're not sending anything else to Ukraine. He was overridden. The man who seems to be in charge now is Mike Ratcliffe, the director of the CIA. I mean, there was a meeting where Donald Trump turned to Ratcliffe, bypassing Hegseth and saying, hey, what, are we going to be able to get those weapons there? Now, I mean, it's all a lie. Again, everything about Trump is a lie. 17, Patriot batteries, the full complement. They don't exist. But the point is, Ratcliffe took the lead on this, not Hegseth. I believe the Pentagon continues to be staffed with professionals who, their job is to, lay out the reality of war. The attack on the Russian strategic bombers was a British affair run by British intelligence, maybe backed by the CIA. The CIA is a rogue entity right now, absolutely rogue, out of control. And I think what Trump is doing right now is turning to the irony here, turning to Ratcliffe into the Russian Mission Center and saying, turn up the screws. He tends to forget it was the Russian Mission Center that helped create the BS narrative that was used to weaponize against him, or at least aspects of it. I know there were some people who questioned some of the intelligence, but the point is, I mean, Trump is just confused. He's just a confused man right now. These drone attacks that are taking place in Russia right now, they're all planned by the British, 100% planned by the British. The Germans are facilitating with some technologies, et cetera. But this is a British operation, and you have Trump meeting with the Brits, being briefed by the Brits. He understands what's going on. He may now decide to allow Ukraine to use the ATACMS to a greater range. I think people should be reminded. Again, I can't speak for the Russian government, nor would I ever be advising the Russian government on what to do. But one, has to keep in mind that when Meshnik was fired back in November, it was a weapon system under development, meaning that the system that was fired was not a production missile. It was a missile that had already undergone certain testing. It was ready for operational testing. But it was a missile that had, the booster taken from this missile, the second stage taken from this missile, the post-boost vehicle modified from this missile, and then handmade dispensing, mechanisms and purpose-built, submunitions. It was all sort of a pre-production missile put together. They fired it and it worked. And at that point in time, Putin signed off on it and said, turn it into, full-scale production. Now Putin has announced that the Oreshnik is in serial production. That means that all those components that were used in the Oreshnik, instead of, being pulled one of and modified, they now have a production line. So it's not just the Votkin's machine building plant that's assembling this. It's, you know, a propulsion center outside of Moscow. It's a, you know, guidance center in outside of Perm. It's a, you know, warhead center outside of Chelyabinsk. They all have now production lines dedicated to this. The entire system has come together, and now it flows into Vodkinsk, gets turned into a serially produced missile, which then gets turned over to the Russian military. And the reason why I bring all this up is that if the Russians decide to unleash the Oreshnik, it's not going to be one missile. I mean, the Ukrainians are playing with fire here. And I think Putin has come out and said just the other day that if Europe or Germany participates directly or indirectly in an attack against Russia, Ukraine will be the target of Russian retaliation. So I think you will see the Oreshnik brought in, not in a single fire, but we're talking about a sustained barrage of Oreshniks that will just level Ukraine. That's the direction we're heading here. You know, up until now, Russia's probably, you know, held back on that in hopes that Donald Trump would do the right thing. But if Trump is stupid enough to allow ATACMS to be used, you know, this goes back to the situation that exists in the fall of 2024 when the Biden administration signed off on this very insanity. People should remember what the reality was at that time. In November, I think it was Rear Admiral Radcliffe is the CIA director. I can't remember his name. Butler, something like that. He's the plans guy for Buchanan, Rear Admiral Buchanan, director of plans for Strategic Command. That's our nuclear armed forces. And he gave a briefing to CSIS in Washington, D.C., where he answered some questions. And basically, he said that the United States is prepared to engage in a nuclear exchange with Russia. That means a limited nuclear war with Russia. And he said, we're prepared to win. He said something else, that maybe the government should be more honest with the American people about what winning means. Because he said, if we have a nuclear exchange with Russia and we win, life will never be the same for Americans ever again. Meaning the thing we call life that we all love, it'll be totally different because we'll be living in a nuclear wasteland, no electricity, no food supplies, martial law, no freedom, no nothing. That's the future for fighting a nuclear exchange with Russia. Now, people say, well, that's just planning. I mean, he's just a planning. Well, except that it's not just that, because the Russians had said that if the Biden administration allows these long-range ATACMS strikes, that their nuclear doctrine will be brought into play. And they published a new nuclear doctrine, I think, in late November, early December. There was a briefing held at Congress. The CIA went around and briefed. And I ended up talking to a very senior Democrat who was present at this briefing. And I asked, I said, I know you can't give away national secrets and I wouldn't ask you to, but the Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, they all say that the CIA assessed that Russia was bluffing. I said, is that what the CIA said? Did they believe that Russia was bluffing about the nukes? And this very senior Democrat said, no, the CIA said the exact opposite, just not bluffing. That if these ATACMS are used, Russia, if the wrong targets are hit, Russia will use nuclear weapons against NATO. He said, that's not the scary part. The scary part was the Biden administration, senior Biden administration people in the briefing saying, we're ready for this. So Buchanan's briefing wasn't just theoretical. Buchanan's briefing was, we're ready to go to war. And there are people saying there was a better than 50% chance we were going to have a nuclear war at the end of last year. Better than 50% chance. The only thing that saved it was Donald Trump coming out. He gave a Time magazine interview where he said, if I'm president, I won't continue this ATACMS thing. And that allowed the Russians to say, okay, we don't need to go into nuclear war right now. We'll wait for the new president to come in and he'll end this stupidity. We just have to ride this thing out. Russia's been riding out stupidity like the Ukrainian drone attack against their strategic bombers. That should have brought about an immediate nuclear response by doctrine. They attacked Russia's nuclear bombers. So it should have been the end of a lot, but the Russians are behaving responsibly. they're behaving responsibly because they're still holding out hope that Donald Trump will do the right thing and stop this insanity. But now Trump says he doesn't want to talk to Putin. So my guess is that Trump is going to do the dumbest thing possible and authorize the Ukrainians to use long-range strike missiles. And they're going to do that, and then Russia's going to flatten Ukraine using Oreshniks. And then Donald Trump's going to make a panicked phone call to Vladimir Putin to try and stop World War III. We were close to 50%, over 50%. There's a greater than 50% chance of a nuclear war last fall. Straight up. Not exaggeration. If Donald Trump allows long-range strike, we're back to that level of stupidity. Better than 50% chance of nuclear war. Do we really want to roll the dice? I mean, this is why you have to question who's advising the president. Because I think Trump continues to believe that the Russians are bluffing because the Russians have absorbed these attacks and just continue, you know, pressing home on a winning formula. But Russia can only take so much. And at some point in time, when you cross a certain line, I mean, already you have these British-directed drones, you know, taking out critical infrastructure. Fortunately, it's a harassment, but it's not actually harming Russia in terms of their strategic economic capabilities. But if the ATACMS starts coming in, striking command and control centers, logistics centers, and things of that nature, the gloves come off. And I think you're going to see destruction in Ukraine like you've never seen before. And then the next thing the Russians will say is the next strike is nuclear, and it won't be limited to Ukraine. And that's when Trump will make the phone call. So he can sit here and, you know, and sit there and say, I'm really not feeling like a phone call right now. Too bad, Donnie baby. You know, it ain't going to be Russia calling you, by the way. You know, it isn't going to be Vladimir Putin saying, please talk to me, please. It's going to be Donald Trump sending a panic message. I need to talk to Putin now. We need to end this war now. And Putin's going to say, we end it the way we always said we're going to end it. And this time I think Donald Trump says yes, and we move forward. But what it takes us to go right up to the edge of the nuclear abyss to achieve this common sense, you know, solution. The war could end today, right now, without playing nuclear, roulette.